The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This treasure in the known galaxy is out there. It's more important than you can imagine.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Positively Trek, your happy corner of the Star Trek universe. I'm Dan Gunther, flying solo this week. Barry, unfortunately, was unable to make the recording this week, and normally we don't do this on the Positively Trek podcast, but I figured this would be a good week to do episode reviews, which is something, like I said, we haven't done for a long time. Not something that we normally do on the podcast, but this is, of course, a very special week where we have two new episodes kicking off the fifth season of Star Trek Discovery, and not just the fifth season, but the final season of Star Trek Discovery. So definitely a moment in history here, the series that brought back Star Trek, that kind of ushered in this current renaissance of Star Trek on television that we've been getting, is sadly coming to an end. So this Thursday, the same day that this podcast episode drops, we have two new episodes on Paramount Plus. So season 5, episode 1, Red Directive, and episode 2, Under the Twin Moons. So I'm going to start out this episode with a spoiler warning. This episode does contain detailed plot spoilers for these two episodes. If you have not watched them yet, do not listen. Or if you don't care about spoilers, go ahead. But be warned, I am going to be talking about these two episodes and giving you some of my thoughts on the events of these two episodes. So without further ado, let's just jump right into it. So like I said, season 5, episode 1, Red Directive, is where everything kicks off. And to start out with, I want to say I'll give my thoughts on these two episodes as a whole and kind of where I think this season might be going at the end of the episode. But for now, just kind of my rough thoughts, having just seen these two episodes. So to begin with, we have a big action sequence, which it feels like every season of Star Trek needs to start out with these days. And I'm of mixed feelings about this. I don't mind action sequences. I think they're kind of cool, but they're not the be-all and end-all of Star Trek and not my favorite thing. And this one especially, given that they have to do the whole jumping into the middle of an action sequence that takes place later in the episode and then doing the 4 hours earlier to kind of jump us into the main story, that always feels a little bit forced to me. Not wanting to start this out on a negative thought, and again, this is just a small quibble that I have with this tendency to do this, you know, 4 hours earlier and jumping back in time thing, but it was something that I bumped on a little bit. But that said, you know, Burnham is riding a starship at warp. It's kind of a cool little tease for what we're going to see later in the episode, but one that I feel is unnecessary. I think that this episode could have started out with us at Starfleet headquarters celebrating the sort of millennium of the Federation without doing the crazy action sequence to kind of have to bring us in. But putting that aside, we're going to get into the actual story here, which is this reception at Starfleet headquarters, Federation headquarters, where, like I said, they're celebrating the millennium of the Federation, give or take a few decades, as they say, because they couldn't celebrate during the burn. So, yeah, we jumped over the 1,000-year anniversary of the Federation, but they're going to celebrate it now, I guess. We get to see where the crew is now, what's going on. It seems that Paul Stamets is in a bit of a funk because they're shuttering the Spore Drive program. The prototype for the new Spore Drive was, of course, aboard Book's ship last season, which was destroyed. And now Starfleet has opted to go with something called the Pathway Drive, abandoning the Spore Drive in favor of that, which, of course, Stamets is unhappy about. It doesn't take long for Burnham to be pulled away by the president to kind of hobnob with some dignitaries. And from there, Vance pulls Burnham away and we get the kind of kickoff of what this season is going to be all about. But in the meantime, we also come back to my favorite couple in Star Trek Discovery. We have Saru and Tarina, this continuing romance here. And Saru has been offered a position as ambassador, and he's unsure if he's going to take the position. It would mean him having to leave Starfleet, and Tarina doesn't want their relationship to factor into his decision. I really like Saru and Tarina's relationship. I think these two have wonderful chemistry together, and I love the little playfulness between them. For example, Tarina wanting to know what's on Saru's mind and teasing that she's going to, you know, do a mind meld on him to get that information. Really cute. I love these two. So like I said, Vance pulls Burnham away for this meeting, and it turns out to be with Kovich in something called the Infinity Room, some cool technology we haven't seen before. And it turns out that an 800-year-old science vessel has been found in the Beta Quadrant. Something aboard is vital to the security of the Federation, and Discovery is to jump there immediately to secure the ship. And this is something that we're told is called a Red Directive, the title of the episode, kind of a mission that supersedes all other orders and is vitally important that they complete the objectives of, for example. So not a term I think we've heard in Star Trek before, but you pretty quickly get the meaning that this is a big deal. This is something that you drop everything to do. So Discovery is going to spore jump to this Romulan ship. It turns out to be a Romulan science ship from the 24th century. And the USS Antares is going to join them. They're just warping there, though, so they'll have to catch up. And in the meantime, we meet these two who are going to be kind of the antagonists, at least for the first couple episodes here for sure, Mol and Locke, who have gotten to this Romulan ship first. They manage to get inside the vault and take out whatever objective import is in there that they're after. And Discovery's away team boards the Romulan ship, consisting of Burnham, Reese, and Awoshikun. And Mol and Locke are still aboard. There's a firefight. There's some action-y stuff, some cool tech. One thing that I noticed in here that was pretty cool, we know that the phasers that Starfleet uses in the 32nd century basically are created out of programmable matter or out of these little devices that they just wear on their cuffs. But at one moment, and I missed this the first time I watched it, but I watched a little more carefully, Burnham actually like kind of twists her hand and her hand phaser turns into a phaser rifle. And I was thinking, oh, that's pretty cool. That's a neat little touch. I kind of like that. So Reese and Awoshikun are incapacitated, and Burnham confronts the pair of thieves, hoping to get this Romulan puzzle box back from them that they've taken out of the vault. And Locke throws some sort of grenade or device that basically opens a hole in the hull, ejecting Burnham into space. And that's kind of where we join the action sequence we saw at the start of the episode. So this is a pretty cool sequence, I do have to say. And we saw this sequence in a clip that was released quite a while ago, where Burnham is on the hull of this ship piloted by Mol and Locke as they're trying to get away. Burnham is on the hull trying to disable the warp drive. The USS Antares shows up and tractors them, and we get this voice of Captain Rayner over the comm, played by Callum Keith Rennie. This is our first introduction to the character of Captain Rayner, someone about whom I'm going to have a lot to say by the end of these two episodes. And it sounds like he's a bit of a force to reckon with. He's stubborn, does not want to let Mol and Locke go, even though there's a great risk that their warp field is going to collapse and take the Antares out with it. Eventually, Burnham is able to convince him to let the ship go, as Discovery is there to rescue Burnham as well. She detaches, the ship warps away, sending off a bunch of decoys. And this was interesting because my first thought in this scene here, where the ship warps away with all the drone decoys, it does this weird little spinny thing. It spins its warp nacelles and spins its main hull before it flies off. And there's part of me that was thinking when I watched that, they always have this tendency to do things flashy or make things look cool just for the sake of looking cool. And I honestly thought that that was the case at this scene. Like, oh, why did they have to do that? That's silly. There's no reason to do that. Now, interestingly, we'll get there in episode 2, but there is a reason that they did that, and it's plot related, and it is kind of a cool thing that this thing that I bumped on a little bit actually has an explanation and a reason for being later on in the plot. So we'll get there, but I thought that was pretty cool. The other bit from this sequence that I really like is Burnham flying towards Discovery, Discovery trying to get a lock on her, and it's almost like a bug on the windshield moment as she's beamed in just before she hits the front windshield of Discovery, basically. A little bit maybe over the top action sequence, but it looked pretty cool. I'll give them that. So Kovic, who is aboard the Discovery, he's joined them for this mission, is not happy that they've let these two go. But Burnham says she knows someone who can find them, and this is where we get the return of Book. Book is back, and he is going to be kind of the person who gets inside the minds of these two people who are also former couriers. So he kind of knows how they think, will be able to find them, and indeed is able to deduce that they are going to the planet Kumau. He eliminates all the warp trails of the drones, recognizing them as places they probably wouldn't go, and determine that this is the planet they're going to, and he's probably going to meet this dealer named Fred. So Discovery arrives at Kumau, and of course Locke and Maul have gotten there before them, and we get to see them meet this Fred person, who turns out, interestingly, to be a Sung-type android. And this was kind of cool. So we saw in the trailer some close-up shots of somebody opening a puzzle box. I thought it was Locke. Turns out it's the hands of this Fred guy, who, like I said, is a Sung-type android, and is made to look up kind of like Data, right? The pale skin, the same kind of contacts, the hair slicked back, very reminiscent of Data. I found this character very interesting, very cool that, of course, there would be androids that kind of came forth from the efforts of Alton Sung at the end of season 1 of Picard. He had that colony of androids. It makes sense that that technology would continue. But Fred himself is actually a very old model from probably one of those early generations from that planet in Picard. So on the one hand, it was pretty cool to see this character, this android. But on the other hand, I feel like he puts it a pretty poor showing for a Sung-type android in the fight that ensues. So there's a back and forth between them. He lowballs an offer on all this stuff after having read this book that's inside the puzzle box. It's obvious that it's worth a lot more and is something pretty big. Maul and Locke recognize this and want it back, and he refuses. Like I said, this fight breaks out. His bodyguards are taken out pretty quickly. And I have to say, Fred himself is taken out pretty quickly. Like I said, a little bit of a poor showing for an android. I guess maybe he's showing his age, maybe he's quite old, but he seems pretty inept when it comes to this combat here, which was a little disappointing. We've seen what Data can do. We've seen what, you know, even older androids than him can do. Well, maybe not older, but earlier model androids that didn't exist for quite as long as this guy did, to be fair. But he's pretty quickly dispatched by Locke after Fred shoots Maul, enraging him. So it's interesting to see here the kind of protectiveness that Locke has towards Maul here. And I think that's something that's definitely going to figure into their relationship more as the season progresses. So Book, Burnham, and eventually Captain Rayner arrive, and they encounter the aftermath of this fight here and realize they've just missed them and chase them down using these vehicles that they call Sand Runners. And, you know, again, season premiere, big action sequence. We have the chase through the desert. I also have to make a comment about the music in this episode, and indeed in the first two episodes. Very fanfare-y, very almost Star Wars, maybe a little Indiana Jones. Definitely a shift in the mood of the music in these episodes from what we've seen in Discovery before. And I really like it. It has a lightheartedness feel to it. It has a kind of more epic adventure. Maybe not epic. Maybe epic is the wrong word, but it's less sweeping and awe-inspiring and more kind of flighty and fanfare-y and brassy, which I really enjoy. I think it was a good choice for the season. So meanwhile, this android Fred is beamed up to be examined, and we get some interesting stuff with Stamets and Culber examining this android and linking it back to Alton Sung. He's got in his serial number AS, apparently honoring Alton Sung. I feel like Noonien Sung should have gotten a little bit of credit here, but I guess Alton Sung is kind of the one that ushered in the renaissance of synths being created after that. So I suppose that's okay. I wanted a shout out to Noonien though. So while this chase is going on, we have Tilly back at Starfleet headquarters, and Burnham has kind of asked her to dig into the secrecy behind this mission because they have no idea what this is all about. They've kind of been put on this mission without being told. And it's Tilly who's just about to crack open this file, which alerts Starfleet security, and she's very nearly arrested, but for the intervention of Admiral Vance, who comes in and basically rescues her. Tilly hasn't accessed the file yet, but Vance kind of sneakily says, "Oh, it's too bad I came here too late to stop you." And they open this file and learn what this mission is all about. And now we are going to have to wait till the end of the episode to really learn that when Kovich really reads Burnham in, but we see a hint of it here with this Romulan talking about some great power, and he's put all of his knowledge about it in this diary, the diary, of course, that Mol and Locke have. However, the Discovery crew has it as well because they've accessed the visual recording from Fred's ocular units, his eyes, and have the recording of the diary because he, you know, flipped through it and read it really fast, data-like. So they're on the trail as well. So back in the desert chase scene on Kumau, unfortunately, Mol and Locke are able to get to their ship before they're chased down by Book, Burnham, and Raynor, and they start opening fire and fleeing from their pursuers here. And they determine that they're going to be able to get into these caves and fly through them and get away that way, escaping detection. So Raynor has the Antares fire on the cave opening that they're heading for, destroying it, even though there's a chance, a 30% chance, that it could cause an avalanche and destroy the settlement. Now, thankfully, as he says, 70% for the win, it doesn't happen, but it does give Mol and Locke the idea to open fire on the mountain themselves and bring it down, which causes an avalanche. And now the settlement is threatened. All of these people are going to be buried under this avalanche. There's no time to evacuate them all. And they determine that they would be able to use the Discovery and the Antares as a break in between the avalanche and the settlement and divert it, basically using the ships themselves and their shields to divert the landslide away from the settlement. Of course, this will mean that they will likely lose Mol and Locke. They will probably get away and be unable to be traced because the crews will be busy with this rescue attempt. Raynor has to kind of be convinced to do this, but eventually he comes through and orders the Antares to join Discovery to save the settlement. Everyone's saved, everyone's happy, except, of course, the two criminals do in fact get away, and Raynor gets all pouty about it and leaves. So that's kind of where that part of the mission is left. The two of them did get away, but Discovery has the same clues that they did and will likely be able to kind of trace where they're going. And with that, Discovery returns to space dock in this kind of cloud of sand, a really neat effect as Discovery spore drives in and the sand kind of billows away from the ship from their adventures on Kumau. Saru immediately beams over to talk to Tarina, and I loved this because I thought this conversation was going to go one way and it went completely a different way. So Saru starts talking about how they were on the ship and they were saving the lives of the people in the settlement. And to my mind, I thought this conversation would go in the direction of, I need to stay in Starfleet because I can make a difference there. I helped save those lives, and that's where I can be of the most use. But instead, where this goes is it kind of caused him a little bit to reflect on his own mortality and to realize that life must be lived and one must take joy out of their life in all the ways that they can. And it caused him to realize that his relationship with Tarina must figure into his decision whether or not to take the ambassadorial position or stay on Discovery, because that's what makes him most happy. Discovery, as he says, is his home and his family, but Tarina is also his home and his family, which was very touching. Again, I love these two. So he ultimately decides to resign his commission to Starfleet and accept this posting as ambassador due to his love of Tarina. And in turn, Tarina, as she says, they should codify their relationship. And it basically is Tarina proposing to Saru, which was also very sweet. So Saru has a new job and is now engaged to Tarina. So way to go, Saru. I mean, good stuff. That's awesome. He's one of my favorite characters. Certainly one of my very favorite characters in kind of this new era of Star Trek, but also really kind of climbing the ranks as one of my all-time favorite characters in Star Trek. I love to see good things happen for him, and I'm really appreciative of where it seems that his story is going this season. So Burnham, based on the visual scans of the diary from Fred's memory, realizes where this next planet they have to go is, that's under the twin moons, and she confronts Kovich, who, of course, knows a lot more than he's letting on. It's all classified. He's not telling them anything. Burnham basically convinces him to read them into the mission so that they can pursue this, because Burnham has figured this out and has this bit of information that Kovich needs. Kovich decides to use Discovery as the team that will pursue this mission. And this is like the big spoiler for the episode, the big thing linking it back to Star Trek. So again, even though you shouldn't have listened this far if you haven't watched this episode, I just want to reiterate here the spoilers about the big story behind this episode. So, or behind the season, I should say. If you will recall the Star Trek The Next Generation Season 6 episode, The Chase, we have kind of a follow-up to that. Now, if you don't remember that episode, here's the quick and dirty synopsis. Basically, following a number of clues seeded in DNA across all these different planets, the crew of the Enterprise D, along with some other alien allies, managed to assemble this message that was left billions of years ago by this race of original humanoids. And we learn that they basically seeded the galaxy with DNA to give rise to all of the humanoid species that we see in the Star Trek universe. So throughout the Milky Way galaxy, all of these humanoid species, I mean, we know it's really because of makeup budgets and having to use human actors to portray them, but this episode established in canon that it was the work of these ancient aliens who gave rise to the humanoid form in the Milky Way galaxy. Now, we learn in this episode that Starfleet has come to call them the Progenitors, and basically it is their technology that is the focus of the season. So this is a huge power that Starfleet does not want to have fall into the wrong hands, and Burnham and her crew are going to be the ones to track it down and hopefully get it before anyone else can. I definitely think this was a really interesting thing to kind of hook the season to. That is one of my favorite episodes. That episode in and of itself was a lot of fun with that kind of the chase, right? Trying to find all these clues and assembling them and getting that message. It actually would have been a very good basis for a serialized season of television rather than just the 40 some minute episode that it was. Don't get me wrong. Like I said, I love that episode, but I think there was a lot of meat on that bone that could have been used for a longer story. And that seems to be kind of what we're getting in this season of Discovery, a similar sort of mission where you're assembling clues and finding this technology. So I'm curious to see where it all goes. I've only seen these first two episodes. I've held off watching ahead in order to do this episode and the reviews that I'll be doing on my YouTube channel. But I have to say, this is a strong start. I love that so far anyway, the fate of the galaxy or all life in the universe or whatever doesn't seem to yet be at stake. So that's a nice change for a season of Discovery. I dislike how often they go to the well of putting everybody and everything in peril, but this episode kind of starts us off, I think, on the right foot.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Positively Trek is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. A special thank you to our Constitution class supporters, Jim Stoffel, Joyce Mirren, and Paul D. Kinnear. To help out with the podcast, visit patreon.com/positivelytrek, where for a small monthly donation, you can get early access to ad-free episodes, shoutouts, exclusive content, associate producer credits, and more. Thank you so much for listening, and live long and prosper.
Last dance.
I shall follow your lead.
So from there, let's jump into episode 2 of season 5, Under the Twin Moons. So this is kind of a last dance of Burnham and Saru. As we learned in the previous episode, Saru is taking that ambassadorship position and will be leaving Discovery, but he has one final mission, and this is basically traveling to this world that Burnham identified as being the one that's referred to as Under the Twin Moons, and Saru's going to be able to go along. But before that, we see this kind of inquiry into the events of the previous episode, where Rayner's kind of called to the carpet for his role in the endangerment of the settlement. I really liked this scene. I liked that Burnham was kind of hesitant to testify against Rayner, but at the urging of the president and Admiral Vance, she is compelled to tell the truth of whether or not she agreed with Rayner's decision to fire on the mountain, which gave Mullen Locke the idea to do what they did. Rayner really doesn't help his case and talks back, really, to the president, which was surprising to me. I have thoughts on the character of Rayner, and I know what we're going to get is kind of this arc throughout the season, and there's going to be a redemption arc for his character, I'm sure, based on how he ends up at the end of this episode. But the writers are doing a really strong job of really making you dislike this guy. Like, they're really trying to get him to grate against how we feel about him, and it's working. I'm not a big fan of him. Burnham rolls her eyes at him a lot and is not happy with how he conducts himself. And like I said, he does not help himself in this inquiry and talks back to the president as very insubordinate. But during a recess from the inquiry, Burnham does talk up Rayner to Vance, says that he is a good officer. And Vance himself is in a pretty tough position, having been friends with Rayner for quite a long time. So they kind of stick a pin in that for now. We'll come back to that at the end of the episode. But in the meantime, Discovery is going to, like I said, go to this planet to find Mullen Locke and to follow up on this technology. And Book is assigned to Discovery to help them. So Book is back aboard Discovery in quarters with Grudge, which is really nice to see. Grudge is her usual standoffish self. She is, after all, a queen. Discovery arrives at the planet, and Burnham and Saru are going to be the two-person away team that go down to find the technology, or perhaps the clue that will lead them to the next step in the chase. We're only 2 episodes into a 10-episode season. Obviously, they're not going to find it right away. So my money, of course, is on a clue. So they're down on the planet. They have to walk a good deal of distance because there's this EM field that prevents them from beaming in. Meanwhile, Book is trying to figure out, get inside the head of Maul and Locke. And this is the part that kind of redeemed that little bit from the first episode to me. So he's looking over the footage of the ship's escape, doing the little celebratory twirl before it goes off into warp. And again, when I first saw that, I thought it was just because it looks cool, a little bit of flair to make things look fun. But it actually helps Book get inside their head and realize that they are enjoying their freedom, they're having fun together, they're thrill seekers, and they're really enjoying the chase. So I appreciated that little insight into their psychology and how something that seemed just an innocuous thing, maybe if I were on Discovery and I were investigating things, it would have totally slipped under my radar, but it's something that Book sees and recognizes and helps Culber kind of figure out the psychology of them. So back on the planet, Saru and Burnham are having a talk, and there's a lot of stuff that's kind of feeding into the fact that this is Saru's final mission with her. There's some great little recounting of where Burnham has come from and how much Saru admires her and how he gave her a second chance. I really appreciated that kind of remembering that she came aboard Discovery in the beginning as a convict, basically, and with her career in Starfleet over and how far she's kind of come from there. I also really love Saru in this episode. He has that feeling of an old soul who's seen a lot of action, and indeed he has, but he really feels like a veteran of Discovery at this point, and at the same time kind of content to move on to the next step. So they encounter these remains on this planet that are more recent than any of the kind of interred remains. This is kind of a large burial ground, a necropolis, as Saru calls it. But these remains are more recent, and they wonder how they were killed, and they soon find out as this kind of statue, this fallen statue, which turns out to be a security system, the eyes open up and these drones fly out and start attacking. And I have to say, there's a few moments in this where, typical of Star Trek, this is nothing new for Discovery. There's, you know, shots where the drones probably have them dead to rights, but there's plot armor, so they don't immediately fire when they have a clear shot or something. But that said, there are a number of pyrotechnics and stuff done on the stage here that felt very realistic and really felt like these two were in danger at several points. So kudos to the team behind that, because sometimes a lot of these sequences can feel like the characters aren't actually in a lot of jeopardy. And I was pretty impressed that there was a true feeling of jeopardy a number of times here. So on Discovery, Tilly and Adira are trying to figure out what the power source of these things is so that they can shut them down. And they're going through all these hyper futuristic technologies. And Raynor, who's apparently been monitoring comms, communicates to them via hologram and gets them to kind of think outside the box and think about what an ancient technology like the Primellians — they were the ones that inhabited this planet, nice little TNG reference there — what kind of technology they would have used 2,000 years ago. And they realize that the EM field is the power source for this. It's kind of a more ancient power than what they would be used to. And they figure out a way to disable it. Basically, Burnham wants to destroy the control node, which would possibly harm or destroy the clues that they're after. Saru suggests using an EM pulse instead to disable it. And that suggestion makes the most sense. So Burnham does that while Saru draws fire. And again, there's some pretty tense action-y bits here. We get to see action Saru again running his really fast Kelpian speed, which we haven't seen in some time, but that was kind of fun to see again. And Burnham manages to disable the system. So with that security system down, they're able to get to that central building where the clue is, but they find out that Mull and Locke have damaged the stone and made the message impossible to read, except Saru is able to see these kind of iridescent microbes that have found their way into the grooves where the words were. So they're able to still read the message, even though it has been kind of phased away. And there's a little bit of kind of Indiana Jones problem solving here as they realize there's four stanzas of this poem, the clues of which kind of lead you to think about Beta Zed. It talks about opaline waters and thoughts that are shared. So they're like, oh, Opal C, Beta Zed, thoughts are shared. That must be where we have to go. But typically, these Romulan poems have five stanzas and there's one missing. Beneath the stone is the fifth verse, which we later find out contains the words, a world like no other where two souls entwine, joined as one, which leads them to it being Trill. They also find an artifact alongside this missing piece of the poem. They also find this small artifact, which they discover is able to fit into this facsimile of the symbol they found in Velik's diary, and it's part of a map. So we're going to do this where we find different pieces of this map over the course of the next few episodes, I'm assuming. So meanwhile, there's this whole second story with Book, kind of a secondary story going on here, where he's trying to talk down Locke and Mull by communicating with them and trying to get them to stand down. In the course of this conversation, he recognizes a tattoo on Mull and afterwards brings up her image and has Zara de-age her to 7 years and 3 months old and recognizes her. And later we find out that she was this girl named Melene, and she is the daughter of Cleveland Booker IV, who is the current Cleveland Booker's mentor. So I wasn't expecting this kind of connection between Book and the antagonists here, and I'm really curious to see where this goes. Some might say it's an example of small universe syndrome, they just happen to know each other, but I'm really fascinated to see what kind of personal stakes this has for Book. As he says, she's kind of the closest thing he has to family left, having lost his entire world last season. So yeah, I'm very curious to see where that all goes. Meanwhile, we have Saru packing up ready to leave. We have a very touching goodbye between Saru and Burnham. And in this conversation, she's again reminded that there was this idea of second chances, that she got this second chance from Saru. Burnham visits Vance and asks about Raynor, and it turns out Raynor has been asked by Vance to take an early retirement, which of course he's none too happy about, but it feels like maybe he's outlived his usefulness. He's a product of another age. During this time of peace, maybe his way isn't quite the best. But Burnham has a bit of an aha moment during this conversation. And from there, we go to a final conversation of this episode between Burnham and Raynor. And it's a really good scene. I really appreciate this scene where Burnham offers the position of first officer of Discovery to Raynor with Vance's support. And Raynor ultimately accepts. That whole theme of second chances plays into that quite well. I really appreciated that. I thought this is a wonderful scene and an interesting dynamic to set up for the rest of the season. So yeah, we have Burnham and her new number one, Captain Raynor. And with that, the two-episode premiere of Season 5 of Discovery is at a close, and we're off on Season 5 with new episodes coming out every Thursday from now until the end of May. So, yeah, I have to say my quick thoughts on these episodes. I really enjoyed them. I'm really excited for this adventure. I'm curious to see where things go. After four seasons with these characters, I really like them. I really appreciate them. I love them. I'm going to miss them a great deal. So there's a lot of definitely nostalgia packed up into this. Now, interestingly, there's kind of a finality and a kind of nostalgia baked into this episode because it's Saru's final mission with Discovery before he goes off to be an ambassador. But I'm thinking over the course of the season, there's not going to be a lot of that baked into this as the final season, because as we've learned from other behind the scenes stuff, they did film extra scenes when they found out that it was going to be the final season. But while they were filming most of the season, they had no idea that it would be the final season of Discovery, which is definitely unfortunate. So I'm not expecting a lot of that kind of baked in nostalgia looking back. This is a production that does not know that it's ending until, again, we, like I said, we get to that final bit that they filmed for just the final episode to make it a series finale. So I'm curious to see how that's going to play out over the season. If there's going to be, you know, maybe opportunities that have been missed that they would have taken advantage of had they known it was the final season. It's going to be hard not to look at it through that lens. But all of that aside, like I said, a really strong start to this season. I'm really excited to see where things go. We would love to hear from you. Please reach out to us, positivelytrek@gmail.com. What did you think about these episodes? And you can also reach out on the Positively Trek discussion group. We will have a post for this episode. Please feel free to comment on it. And speaking of the Positively Trek discussion group, please join if you haven't already. You can start any topic about anything to do with Star Trek. We welcome new members. You just have to agree to the rules and answer the questions. We will let you right in. We really appreciate the little community we have there. It really is the friendliest place on the internet to discuss Star Trek, in my humble opinion. Well, with that, I've been Dan Gunther. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate you all, and we really especially appreciate our Patreon supporters. Thank you so very much for supporting us. You can go to patreon.com/positivelytrek if you'd like to join our crew and help support the podcast. Until the next episode, thank you once again for listening, and stay positive. Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
Hey there!
Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.